Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is Natasha Alvarez, a permaculture teacher, naturalist, and herbalist from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. In this episode, we talk about her idea of permaculture as revolution through her project, The Year of Black Clothing. Through the conversation, you'll find how a love for the world can move us towards action with a focus on our personal passion. But of course, Natasha and I cover so much more along the way. If you enjoy this conversation or any of the others in the archive, make a donation to the show so it can continue to grow. Find out how at thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. Now then, on to Natasha Alvarez. I'll join you afterwards with some thoughts and updates. Natasha, if you can give me a little bit of your background and biography and how you came to do what you're doing.
Well, thanks for having me, Scott. First of all, I really love your show and I love what you're doing. So I'm super honored to speak on here. But a little bit about my background. Well, I'll start in the way back history. When I was a kid, now as an adult, I can look back and I can say, well, my parents raised me in a way that allowed me to think for myself. And that's a wonderful gift that they gave me. Because, you know, as I moved through school and I ended up in college, there was just this sense of questioning that I carried with me. So is this the right path for me? Is this really what I want to do? And I originally started out in college planning to be a secondary English teacher, which is actually what my dad did for about 30 years. And so in the process of sort of going to school for that, and I started out doing some student teaching, and I was in some of the like city school districts, and I started to look around at that time, and I sort of used that questioning that was in my heart from the way my parents raised me. And I was saying, this just doesn't feel right to me. You know, the way the school system is set up, the way all of this is sort of unfolding, it wasn't satisfying to me. And it didn't seem like something I wanted to be a part of. And around the same time, I met Wilson, my husband. He was also questioning. And so we decided to do some traveling together and we left college. And it was when we left college and started to travel around the U.S. that, I mean, I think we both just fell in love with how beautiful our country is. It's so gorgeous. The mountains and the oceans and the creeks and the rivers and the streams. I think it really spoke to pieces of us that hadn't been spoken to before. So by the time we came back here, we knew that we wanted to focus on learning about nature and the wilderness. And we kind of threw ourselves into that. And I did a correspondence program through a school called the Wilderness Awareness School in Oregon. That allowed me to really kind of like focus my efforts and learn about the natural world around me. And so I have a certification through them. And then one thing led to another and we started gardening and that kind of thing. And we sort of got into permaculture and started to understand the principles more. And Wilson ended up getting his permaculture certificate, but I was sort of resistant and I still don't have it to this day. But I am a permaculturalist through practice. And I do some teaching as well, but not necessarily of the principles, sort of the nature observation and that kind of thing that goes along with it. And then 15 months ago, we had a little boy, our first child, and that kind of changed my whole world around again. And it sort of brought my focus sort of closer to home and closer to my own heart. And that's what sort of led me to get into the project that I'm working on now, which is called The Year of Black Clothing, in Mourning, in Solidarity, in Rebellion. That is an attempt for me to sort of look inside and bring some pieces of myself together and connect to the world in a different way than I have before.
It's interesting for me when you say about traveling the country and seeing how beautiful it was. I joked with my wife that I had to go to Oregon to realize how beautiful it is where I live, that being able to step back away from myself from these things that I see every day and feel mundane and reconnect with the world around me. And it's so easy, I think, within, well, Western culture to get caught up in all these things that we do and to forget about some of those connections. And also that you mentioned your son is, I know what kind of a transformation that was for me. And seeing him today reminds me of when my children were, well, never that small because they're all monsters, with how quickly they grow up, but also how much it changes your worldview to have that kind of a legacy. Before I walk down the road of parenthood, my interaction with your project has been through your blog. Is that the primary place where you're sharing that?
I am writing every day. So the project consists of me writing a blog post every day, which is how people are sort of connecting to my thoughts on this. But the blog entries are sort of the byproduct of me going through a process of grief and mourning about the loss that we're living with at this time. So I mean, I truly believe we are living in collapse, and I think that affects all of us very seriously and very differently. And I got really tired of acting like I'm fine all the time, even though we're living in collapse. And I wanted to look at sort of like the sadness that I carry and the darkness that's sort of inside me because of that. And so as I go through the process of looking at these things that are coming up for me, sometimes it's stuff from my past. Sometimes it's, you know, I'm feeling grief and mourning about animals that we're losing, you know, places that we're losing, ecosystems that we're losing. I'm then sort of going through that process of mourning and grief, and then I'm writing about it each day. So people are able to sort of watch the process through the blog, but we've also planned several actions and we're planning more for the future. Things like, we're calling them blackouts. So we're inviting people from wherever you are to turn off your lights for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, it'll probably progress over time, but to turn off your lights, turn off your devices, turn off your electricity for at least some period of time on any given day. And we sort of like invite people to participate in these with us, but turn everything off so that we can sort of listen and turn inward and connect to one another without the interference of sort of everyday technology that's part of our lives right now. And we're planning some other actions where some more public mourning events to kind of bring awareness and witness how people are feeling at this time and to allow people to connect to like loss in our own personal lives and in our own communities. We have an action going on right now. It's called the 40 Days of Giving, that we're inviting people from wherever they are to tap into these giving challenges. So it's 40 days. It ran from November 22nd. It will end on December 31st. And each day there is a challenge to give of yourself. So at this time during this season, there's so much involved with, you know, buying gifts and doing this. And I really wanted to challenge myself and take it back to the idea of how much can I give of myself? So some of the days are more about sort of giving time and attention to the land, giving attention to the elderly, giving attention to children. And then some of the days are about giving away things. You know, can you give away your favorite thing? Can you challenge yourself to give away bags of things? Can you challenge yourself to give away something that you have made, that you've put your time into, that you love very much? Can you give that away? And then what does that do inside yourself? Does it loosen up some things? Does it sort of like make space for other feelings and emotions to come in? You know, I really kind of want to challenge that in myself and in others and sort of explore that idea. That's some of the actions that we've come up with so far, and we're hoping to sort of, you know, continue along those lines and come up with more as we go along through the year.
If someone wants to connect with the work that you're doing and find out more, what is the URL for your blog that you're writing?
Theyearofblackclothing.wordpress.com.
And I'll make sure that I include links to that in the show notes. I want to return to that idea of your writing on the blog as an expression of your personal process, because you're turning inward. And some of the things that we talked about before we began the formal interview was about some of the stories and the things that we've gone through that get us to where we are now. And how, well, part of that is that, you know, permaculture speaks to our heart, which I think is a very positive thing to consider. But also some of those dark places that people come from, those places where, and this is something I spoke with Ramis Kent about, was that sense of identity can be lead to an existential crisis when the people around them can't support the change and transformation that they're going through. When they encounter problems or have questions, they're left with no support. And I'm wondering not only what your internal process is like, is that just a series of like meditative techniques? Are you like free journaling or something like that, that someone might be able to do to be able to connect with the process you're using? If there is one, I know a lot of times for many of these things, they aren't. They're whatever we find each day. And then also about building the support that you've needed to go through this process for others who might want to do this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I found that it really came up for me when I had my son, that here is this precious little child that I love so much. I would do anything for. I would literally tear somebody apart if they tried to harm him. So there's that on the one hand. And then on the other hand, I'm recognizing that our ecosystem is collapsing. Our social structure is collapsing. I'm recognizing that there are actual individuals who are making decisions every day to contaminate my water, my food, my soil, my air. After I had my son, I'm looking at these two things. On the one hand, I love this little baby so much. I would tear my heart out, you know, to save him, to give him what he needs, to like give him the best future I can. And then on the other hand, there's these terrible, terrible atrocities all around us. So much grief, so much suffering. And it started to make me feel like I was pulled in two directions. And I kind of describe it as like, it made me feel like I was having split personalities or something, that somebody would come to me and say, how are you today? And I would laugh and smile. Then I started to think, that's insane to say I'm fine and laughing and smiling when my air is literally so polluted. We're in the top 25 worst air qualities in the US. And I'm saying I'm fine. Hey, how are you? When I just found out that a number of streams in Pennsylvania are contaminated with radioactive waste from fracking. I mean, that's a crazy thing to do. It's crazy to make waffles and take my dog for a walk when the ecosystem is collapsing around me. So I wanted to sort of look at how that was making me feel, that I was torn in pieces because of that. And I wanted to find a way to kind of bring them back together. So try to find my own authentic emotions about these things and then work on being more authentic in expressing myself to the world, which obviously is a huge challenge. We're like 87 days in, and it's still so hard for me to really sit down with somebody and tell them how I'm feeling about things. But the process mostly has been, I'm really letting my heart guide me on this. If I read about something, if I see something, if I hear something that makes me feel a certain way, I'm forcing myself to stop in that moment, look at how that is making me feel, go through the process. If it makes me scream, I scream. If it makes me want to cry, I cry. I mean, Wilson gets an earful every day about a million different things. And then by the end of the day, I just kind of check in with myself and see where I am. And then whatever comes out in that writing is what comes out. You know, I'm not editing it. I'm not going over it a million times. I'm just trying to sort of speak from the heart and let people know how this process is going for me. And I think what surprises me is how much I am realizing that there are so many other people feeling the same way. And our culture tells us that we are not supposed to talk about those things. We're not supposed to show emotion in public for the most part, unless it's happy emotion. You know, there's a lot of guilt associated with feeling depressed, feeling sad, feeling anything less than happy. And what I'm realizing is that the longer we keep these things quiet and we don't allow ourselves to look at them, and we don't allow ourselves to say to each other, hey, something is really wrong here. You know, we need to do something about this. Then we can't fix it. We can't address something if nobody's saying that it's happening. So I'm really finding out that we have to like look at the things that are ugly and disturbing and sad and the suffering and the loss. And we have to look at those things before we can look at each other and say, okay, this is what we need to do about it.
One of the things about this that's interesting to me is both the internalization of the work that you're doing and then the outward expression of it and the way that you're turning it into actions. I want to touch on the actions, but one of the things that you said there about just being able to be open and honest is one of the things that I think that in some ways our culture has kind of closed us down from having that kind of connection. I know how easy it is to fall into entertainment, or I know what it's like to just look for some kind of an escape, just to make it to the next day. And these different things that we go through in our lives in order to make it, just make our lives work. But that as we disconnect from some of those things that are escapist or remove us from other people, we can begin to reconnect in a meaningful way. And it's, you know, I mean, we're sitting here in your house with all kinds of audio equipment and a laptop and whatnot, but it's like the other screens and things are away. This is a dialogue between two people now where we get to sit here and be human beings and respect one another's positions and just be. And I know how hard that can be, especially to have a dialogue when someone has even if another person you're talking to only has one belief that's different from yours, because of everything that gets fed to us can divide us. Oh, yeah. That becomes this one point of division. And it's like, wait, no, let's tear that apart and find the things that we have in common. And as you go through this process, what is your on-the-ground support structure? Are you finding that you need the other people around you and that feedback from others who feel this way?
I certainly am. I mean, I feel like at this point, I mean, the greatest gift of doing this is like, I knew that I needed to express these feelings so that I could go through this process and look at my own internal structures. But the interesting thing about looking at my own internal structures is they are sort of allowing me to see the structures around me and allowing people to connect to what I'm going through. And so people are coming to me and saying, thank you for doing this. I've been wanting to say this stuff for my whole life, and I didn't think anyone else thought this. And so I've just been carrying it around. And, you know, it's so incredible. Now I'll meet somebody who basically was a stranger to me before, and they come up and they hold my hands and they look into my eyes, sometimes with tears in their eyes, and they say, thank you. I thought I was the only one. And that is how this culture of destruction, which I call it on the blog all the time, keeps us separate and keeps us scared and keeps us alone and disempowers us. And so when we start speaking from the heart, that makes us very vulnerable, but it also allows us to connect to other people. And so, like, that is rebellious in nature. It is rebellious because it goes against what our culture wants us to do. You know, I talk a lot about how corporations sort of, they want us to stay separate and they want us to feel weak so that we need the things that they have to offer us. They offer us these products that are supposed to give us happiness, give us connection, give us love, make us feel better about ourselves. And so they need us to be separate. They need us to feel weak. They need us to feel lonely so that we want the things that they have to offer us. But I'm saying, we're on to your tricks. We're on to your game. We need to connect to each other so that we can sort of have those things authentically instead of through products and that kind of thing. And it kind of reminds me, I have studied herbalism for quite a while and women's health particularly. And in our culture right now, a lot of women are presenting with estrogen dominance because of all the chemicals in our environment and that kind of thing. And so that makes their hormones go all out of balance. And the problem is that there are these false estrogens from these chemical products that sort of plug into the receptors of where the real estrogen should be plugging in to do their jobs. Well, that's exactly what's happening in our culture right now. The corporations and these products and all of this stuff, it's sort of plugging into our emotional receptors, the empathy receptors, the connection receptors, the happiness receptors, the sadness receptors. And instead of having real human connection and land connection sort of filling those receptors, we've got stuff filling up those receptors. And that clogs up the networks, and that keeps us from living an authentic life. So really what's come to me through this project so far is just how many people are feeling these same feelings. And so we really need to allow ourselves to become vulnerable in order to make these real connections. And then there's action and movement that comes from that.
Earlier this week, I spent 4 hours with a friend of mine who I've known for 16 or 18 years now. We lived together for almost 7. And those 4 hours that he and I spent together just a couple days ago was the longest, most in-depth, open conversation we've ever had with each other. And I made that comment when we were sitting there, and it's like, wait, we're both finally at a place where we're ourselves. We're not messed up anymore. We got over some of our problems, and here we are, and we're able to accept each other for who we are and just be in this environment. No screens, no distractions. It's just you and I having a drink, hanging out, and talking about these things that matter to us. I find that sometimes when you reach that place where you're living authentically and being open and honest and vulnerable, that it can wind up coming off as unauthentic and insincere because of how jaded and disconnected we are from ourselves and the way that we feel. Have you ever read Nonviolent Communication by Marshall Rosenberg?
I'm fairly familiar with the idea through activist work. So I know, you know, a lot of activist circles use nonviolent communication and that kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, when you were talking there, sort of this, I just started to think about how, so a big part of this is I felt like I needed to look at this stuff, to look at these feelings, to look at this grief, to look at this loss, because part of being in love with the environment right now and with the natural world is to be heartbroken every minute of every day. So I think actually there's this wall we have up, you know, from living in a culture that is competitive and violent and angry and dangerous. It makes it very hard for us to connect to one another because we have built these walls of protection. But you know what else it makes it very hard to connect with? The land. Because, you know, when you are falling in love with the land, when you do fall in love with the land, that is a relationship like any other. And I always tell people, if you want to get to know nature, if you want to get to know the wild, go know one spot. I don't get to know you, Scott, by hanging out with you in a group of people. I get to know you by sitting down with you and listening to your stories and, you know, sharing my feelings. I get to know you by spending time with you. And maybe from knowing you, it allows me to know somebody else who is kind of like you. And it allows me to understand something else about this person because they've had similar experiences to you. For me, falling in love with the land is the same as falling in love with a human being or getting to know a human being. You go and you find one spot and you connect to that one small spot on the land. And it is through that spot that you're able to understand, you're able to see, you're able to listen to the rest of the land around us, to the rest of the landscape, and to the greater environment. Because it's just like getting to know a person.
When you talk about those barriers, it's interesting to me because for so long, because of the industry that I was in before, it was always about putting out fires. It was always about the next emergency. And that the only way to operate in that environment was from a place of ego and arrogance. And anger, that no one could ask you a question that could undermine your expertise. And then as that goes away, it's interesting, at least through my personal process, because it's wish to speak too much about what I'm working through, because this is your story, but it's a lot of what you're talking about resonates with me because a lot of the internal work that I've been going through over the last like 3 months or so, and getting past that demeanor of anger and arrogance to just be.
You said, you know, I don't want to talk too much about myself. This is your story. But my story is your story. My story is Wilson's story. My story is my neighbor's story. My story is the person across the street's story. I mean, we are all suffering. If one of us is suffering, we are all suffering. If one piece of land is suffering, everything suffers. We are truly connected. And that is not in any kind of, you know, new agey or weird way. It is just that we can feel what everything else is feeling. And so part of this is that I came to it through herbalism and trying to understand health and how to make ourselves healthy. As I started to say to myself, I can learn about a bazillion herbs, but if the planet is collapsing, if the ecosystem is collapsing, if there are people suffering all over the place, that's going to be really hard for me to feel 100% well because I am part of a system. I'm part of a larger whole. And I think that's where permaculture can really give us a guide to reconnection, to being able to regenerate the land, and to rebellion. The principles that are laid out through permaculture are just simple principles that earth-based cultures all over the world have lived by, you know, since the beginning of humanity. This is really a returning to an earth-based way of living. That's what I think that permaculture is. It allows us modern people to understand and connect in a way to the earth that will allow us to move forward from here in a more holistic and regenerative and sustainable way.
I want to move into that idea of permaculture's revolution, but before we get there, are you finding as you go through this process, now that you're over 80 days into it, that your nature awareness is improving, that your connection with the world around you is getting better?
You know, it's so interesting because I've been going through the process of rewilding for about 11 years now, and there was a time when I felt very, very connected, that I felt like my skills of observation were very, very crisp and honed, and I was spending a lot of time with that. And then through the course of just sort of everyday living for a number of years, I think I kind of lost that a little bit. You know, I was still actively working on some aspects of rewilding, but my eyes closed a little bit. I wasn't able, I think I lost a little bit of what maybe I had known. And then I think since having our child, and then particularly since doing this project, I feel like my skills of awareness are definitely growing again in ways that they might not have before, particularly the piece of me that is sort of a source of empathy. It's blossomed in a way that I've never experienced before. So that empathy and allowing that to sort of grow in myself, that is really a way of looking at the world through new eyes, you know, where I can sort of feel more now than I think I could in the past. You know, before I spent a lot of time learning the names of the plants, learning the names of the animals, learning about their scientific behaviors, learning about feathers, learning about bird calls. But somehow this has opened a piece of me, maybe because I'm starting to take those walls apart a little bit, those walls that civilization have sort of made me build up. But as those walls start crumbling down, and as I become more empathetic and more vulnerable, it's like I'm able to feel more now in the landscape and in the world around me. And so part of that is really hard and painful. I mean, there's definitely a lot of loss going on right now. But part of that is allowing me to understand that we're all doing the very best we can, from the smallest bird to the top of the largest mountain. We all have our work and our jobs to do. And it's just allowing me to really sort of respect that in other creatures and in other humans, which I think I had lost a little bit of that over time, especially through activist work, which definitely, you know, can make you very frustrated and very angry, and even frustrated with other activists, because it can be really hard to work with other people in this world today. That's a big part of this for me, is just kind of allowing myself to become soft again. And so that's scary, but it's also exhilarating.
And that goes back to what you said earlier about being vulnerable, you know, and Dave Jackie said that, you know, vulnerability is our strength. And you and Wilson and I talked about this before we began the interview, was about that whole thing that there's more to permaculture than the techniques, that if we're really going to build a permanent culture, a permanent civilization, we have to be building our relationships with others. We have to be connecting with other people, and that there's so much to explore. When you said about each of us having kind of a role to fill, we have to take action. Yeah, I really connect with that idea of you proposing actions for people to take that can make a difference in one way or another. I'm feeling a bit cynical myself today. But that idea of turning lights off and not using electricity might not make a very big difference in the scale of the amount of carbon released, the amount of energy used, or things like that. But it's the other connections that we can make with that, the other things we can do with that time and that space. And thinking about the techniques of permaculture, they're like the sexy things that you can see and that really stand out. But as we think about the ethics and the principles, those are really, at least to me in the place where I find myself now, those are the things that we're really trying to connect with and internalize and build, because not everything is appropriate for everyone, every space. But we can use these ideas to do what is right by us and the world and other people.
That kind of brings me to one of the main aspects of this project for me, is that through my activist work, I started to feel really frustrated that I couldn't get people to pay attention to what I wanted them to pay attention to. I keep going around and around. How can we get more people to, you know, listen to this? How can we get more people to understand? How can we get more? How can we get them to pay attention? And then I realized that, why do I want to fight for the land? You know, what is it that is inside of me that I would fight as hard for the land as I would for Revel or Wilson, you know, my family? And it goes back to what I said before, that I am in love with the land because I have spent the time connecting, getting to know it, getting to know all the aspects of its personality, if you will. So when I say to somebody who hasn't gone through the process of reconnection or rewilding, hey, you should really care about fracking. It's really damaging our water supply. You know, it's really compromising our life. And they look at me with blank eyes and they're like, it doesn't affect me personally. Why should I care about that? It's like, now I can see that that's just because they haven't built that relationship. So that's why it's so important for us to take the time to connect to the land and to each other, because you fight for what you love. You care about what you know. You protect what is in your heart, not the stuff that somebody tells you you should be caring about. It's the stuff that you truly care about. That what makes you heartbroken? What makes you get up in the morning? What makes you want to scream? That's what I am wanting you to go work on. I don't want you to work on my causes. My causes are the things that make me get up in the morning. This revolution is going to take everybody looking inside, finding out what wakes them up, and then going and doing it. You know, so part of this is mourning. Part of it is standing in solidarity with others, the land, and other people. And then that part of it is rebellion. I really think that at this time, what this revolution is and what is happening now is, it's small things, it's big things, it's everything. It's not going to look like one group of people going to one street and yelling and having a fight with somebody, which is sort of the picture of revolution that I have in my mind. It is sort of methodical and deliberate turning away from the system that we have in place and a turning to the things that make us excited, the things that we're in love with, to people, to the land, and to things that are true and authentic. And I think the revolution is not so much, you know, one action or one battle or one conflict. The revolution has to come from within. The revolution is a changing of our hearts, a reconnecting, a coming alive, if you will.
And I think that that's a lot more powerful and transformative than saying that we need to go out into the streets and protest every day. From what I'm hearing from you about this idea of permaculture's revolution and it coming from the heart is that it is apolitical, that it doesn't revolve around a particular group of people or a tribe or anything else. If you're someone who participates in your church that, and that's something you care about, go to your church and work with them. Strengthen your bonds there. If you want to go paint signs and go and protest, then go protest.
Yes. That is exactly what I'm saying. That is the heart of it. If you feel like your energy is best spent going into the streets and yelling and, you know, organizing people to do that, by all means, give it all of your energy and just go and do that. Throw yourself into it. But if you feel that the best thing that you can do right now is to teach your child how to track animals, by all means, go and do that. I think what needs to happen is just people waking up, coming alive. And that is different for everybody. We're all motivated by different things, you know, for different reasons. And so it's really like the rebellion is passion, you could say. It's just finding those places where you just like can't resist. You have to get involved and then going ahead and doing that. And so what is happening for me and for Will, who he's been going through the process with me, is it's like looking at the grief and looking at the loss and sort of the wounds that we all carry, that allows us to become more vulnerable and it allows us to sort of open up and open our hearts. And so then it's easier to recognize the things that speak strongly to us. You know, you find out about yourself. You find out what triggers your emotions, you know, what allows you to just get fired up, what you want to get involved with. And so it's definitely a multifaceted approach that we're going through right now. And it's kind of a system in a way, as you sort of dismantle and let everything fall away and you let yourself kind of fall apart a little bit. And then it's in the falling apart that you realize where you need to be, what your niche might be, which is, you know, exactly what we're going for in permaculture. We're each trying to find the niche that we belong in, and then we can thrive there, just like when a plant finds its perfect niche. We can thrive in the niche that we're meant for.
What you're doing is all-inclusive, and I think we need that. And considering some of the places that I've gone through, I understand how important that can be for people to be able to connect with others and to be in a place where they can be open and honest about where they're coming from and what matters to them, and being able to reach out to people who they might not normally connect with just to ask questions or to ask for help or to know that they're available. And you made the comment about, you know, revolution, a fight on the street corner. And it's one of the things that I speak to often is how much I want a peaceful, nonviolent world. And from the sound of it, even though you speak of that image of revolution as that kind of an action of violence, that you don't mean a revolution in that way because it is coming from an internal place.
I think that the revolution that I'm talking about, I do believe that to build a new world, to build a new culture, that process could get messy. I mean, to be very honest. And I think that there could be actions that end up being frightening or, you know, could be construed as violence. I'm not saying that has to be. I'm saying it could be. I'm saying I'm a realist. I understand that this revolution is going to take everything we have. But I think that the true rebellion, I think that the true revolution is in connecting with the land, connecting with each other, connecting with our own hearts. Because as we turn our backs on this culture that we were brought up in, the culture that we live in, we must have a culture to turn to. And that's where I think the permaculture principles can guide us. Let them be our guide. Let us know them. Let us like tattoo them on our arms. Let us teach our children. Those principles are the ones that will allow us to live in a way that is harmonious with each other and with the land. And that's where the real revolution is. So yes, there might be all different kinds of actions that we see come out of this, but the actions are not the things to get hung up about. The actions are, you know, the things to plan, the things to get involved with, the way that we're going to get people to see what's happening, the way we're going to start to make things shift. But that's not the revolution. Those are just the actions. The revolution is inside. The revolution is, you know, in sitting face to face. And the revolution is in joining hands. And the revolution is outside.
The concept itself is so simple that it comes from the heart, to love ourselves, to love nature, one another. But, well, as you said, and as I said before we began, it took you 11 years of rewilding and other work to get here. If we're going to make it, we just got to do the work.
Got to do the work. There's no way around it. You know, sometimes I talk to somebody and they say, well, you know, it's taken you 11 years to get this far. And I say, yeah, and I'm still like in preschool with this stuff. I don't know anything. I'm a child in this work. That's where I sort of, the fear kind of creeps back in. And I think, you know, we just like don't have the time to give ourselves the space to do the connecting that needs to happen. But then I force myself to stop thinking like that. And I think that the key is that if we help one another, it goes faster. And so for Wilson and I, we felt very isolated for the most part in this work. You know, we, and on our own parts, we didn't do a good job of connecting to others. We didn't do a good job of asking for help. We still don't do a good job of that. You know, we're trying to get better. But this is where that vulnerability comes in, and this stripping away is, you know, if I sit down with you and I'm like, Scott, I really need help with this. I want to break my heart open. I want to know how to start a fire. I want to know how to build a shelter that doesn't leak. I want to know how to plan a protest, you know, that is nonviolent or whatever. You know, it's in the asking for help that will make this go more quickly. And it is also in the throwing ourselves into it with everything we have. I do believe that we don't have the time to make this a part-time job. We need to make this a full-time job, every aspect of our lives, from the time we wake up in the morning to the time we go to bed. Let it be the reason you wake up in the morning. Just go with so much gusto that you are exhausted in a good way at the end of the day. Because one day we'll look back at this, and I truly believe this, that our people in the future will look back at this and it will be sort of a weird memory. But if we want the people in the future, and I want my child to have a future, I want my grandchildren to have a future, I want your grandchildren to have a future, you know, I really want that with all of my being. I will do anything to make that happen. If we can come together and we can say that together, and we can say, this is what's worth spending our time on. If I do nothing else with my life, let me work on this. Let me work on changing what we have here. Let me work on stripping away that which is broken. Let me work on building up what is left. Let me work on loving. Let me work on transforming. Like, that is a life well lived. You only have one life. It's not going to matter how much money you have in the bank. It's not going to matter, you know, how much stuff you have sitting in your house. That is gone when you're gone. That is just doesn't mean anything. What matters is how we use the life that we have. You know, what do we apply it to? How do we change the world? How do we work together? And it comes back to, how do we love each other? And that's what is real. That is real. It's what we just need to throw ourselves into right now. And to be unafraid to do that. I mean, it is very scary. And it might mean changing your whole life around. And it might mean moving into a 280 square foot house, which is where Will and I live, you know, so we can live simply and we can spend our time doing what we want to do. But it might be scary. And, you know, that's part of this idea of embracing that and moving forward.
There's a line from my conversation with Ethan Hughes that I've repeated over and over and over again. It's just that idea that we have to meet people where they're at. But in the same way, we also have to meet ourselves where we're at. Because I'm in your tiny home right now. And I wouldn't say that your house could fit in my living room because my house isn't that big, but it's, you know, it's not a lot of space. Yeah. But at the same time, I look at the things that my wife and I are doing to show another model that is closer to some of these other things that we embody. And that the entire reason why I love to interview people is to hear their stories, because it's, what are you doing in the world that is taking action, that is embodying what you believe in, that other people might connect with?
Yeah. My model is not Scott's model. My system is not Scott's system. My system is not my mother's system. You know, what works for me, what brings me joy, the way that I choose to live to embody what I believe, no one else has to do this. No one else has to live this way. You don't even have to look at what I'm doing. You don't have to give, you know, 2 cents about what I'm doing. just look inside yourself and see what it is that lights you on fire and then bring that to life. You know, I don't think everybody should move into a tiny house. And frankly, I don't care if they do. All I want is for people to follow your own hearts, follow your own passions. And so, you know, what Scott Mann is doing is awesome. That's what Scott Mann is doing. But I do think that we need to help one another do those things, to give each other the container and the space and the understanding and the empathy to do those things. And I do think we need to look at one another and say, you know, it's okay to say that this is not working, that this system, that this civilization, that this culture is broken, possibly beyond repair. And it's okay to say, I think we need to turn our backs on this and maybe start again, or turn the broken pieces into something that we can use, or find some way to transform it. But I don't think we have to keep looking at each other and saying, we can fix this, we can fix this, we can fix this. Because when you come to a place where governments do not support their people anymore, and you come to a place where corporations run the world, and you come to a place where the environment is collapsing and people are suffering, I think the right thing to do is to look at each other and say, hey, this is really broken. Let's find a new way to do things. And so I think we really need to get honest about that. And I think that a lot of people do want the world to change, but they also don't want to change their personal lives. So, like I said, you don't have to live in a tiny house. This is what Natasha does. I like to do it. You know, I'm not expecting Scott Mann to do it. But I am expecting that each person look inside and make the changes in their own lives that will support their own work. And so I don't think that we can change the world or start fresh or tear down the one that's standing by living exactly the same way that we've always lived. I think there has to be some kind of movement and some kind of change. And that is for each individual person, community, city, town, whatever, to look at each other and make those decisions on their own. And that's what this revolution is. It's not one thing. It's not one battle. It's not one action. It's everything.
Which makes it inclusive and accepting of everyone who's doing their work. And Bill Mollison said it in the designer's manual. You know, I think, therefore, I act is one of academia's fallacies, that we really have to be taking action. And it's Michael Pilarski talked about, you know, if we each clean up our own little piece of the world, then we can make it a better place. And I go, that might not be enough, but it's a start. That for those of us who are here in like this third wave of permaculture, that we need to be showing people more models of what work and how they can do things. But more importantly, I think we need to be able to ask for help. And do you have contact information on your blog?
Yeah. So one interesting aspect of the blog is that we have invited people to send us guest pieces. So we are looking for pieces of writing, people's personal stories, art, photography, video. I mean, anything that you feel like you need to express that sort of falls into these categories of mourning, solidarity, and rebellion. So our email contact information for that is mourningsolidarityrebellion@gmail.com. Pretty simple. And we also have a Facebook page, The Year of Black Clothing. So somebody, so go ahead and like that, and then you can send us messages through there, and you can post things to us through there. And I really personally enjoy just hearing stories, getting a line from somebody saying, you know, this is what I'm going through, or this is what I'm working on. That is, you know, just a huge reward for me in this. So selfishly, please send me your stories. I love to connect with other people.
Yes, please. If you connect with what Natasha's sharing with us today, reach out to her. And as I say to every one of you, and I mean this as honestly and completely as I can, if there's any way that I can help you, you know, all my contact information is out there between all the different places you can connect with me. If I can't help you, I know great people such as Natasha who I've talked to, who I've met, that we can find you someone whose story you can connect with to help you on whatever road you're on.
There are permaculturists all over the world. There are people reading this blog from all over the world. You know, it's amazing the gifts that technology gives us as far as connection goes. It can be a hindrance and it can be a help. Let's use it to be a help.
And I think that kind of brings me to a logical close of where I wanted to go with the interview. Is there anything else that you'd like to add for the listeners?
I just want to go back to, I really think it's this sort of, this revolution is happening. That's what I really think has become clear to me. You know, I can see it now. I can see that there is resistance. There is a resistance, and there are people all around us fighting, challenging the status quo, fighting, just fighting with all their heart, you know, trying to make changes. And I think that there are no statistics about this rebellion. There are no numbers on a page. We don't know how many of us there are. We don't even know who we are necessarily. And that's part of how they keep us from believing that it's happening. You know, you're not going to necessarily see it on the nightly news, but you will see it in little stories about individuals doing different things, taking care of one another, taking care of the land. You'll see it in permaculture. You'll see it in people taking care of children. You know, you will see it if you are looking for it. You will see it if you are aware. I promise you, you will see it. And so I really think what we need to start saying is, hey, I'm part of the resistance. We need to own it. We need to say, hey, I am a rebel. I am challenging what's happening right now. I am a freedom fighter, if you will. I am going to make a change. I am going to make a difference. And I think we need to not be afraid to say that. I think we need to sort of name what is happening in the world right now. And that name is revolution. And that's all it is. It's small things. It's big things. It's everything. Just fall in love. That's my big piece of advice. Just let yourself fall in love. It's the scariest thing in the world. It can be absolutely terrifying. Your heart will be broken a million times over and over and over again, but you will come alive.
And I have nothing more to add to this. A perfect end. Thank you, Natasha, for taking the time to sit with me and talk about all this. It's a good place.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for your work. It's wonderful. I know you don't call yourself revolutionary, but your work says otherwise. So thank you.
And that was Natasha Alvarez. Though I'm wrapping up this show a few weeks after the actual interview with Natasha, I still agree with my closing sentiment. I have nothing more to add to this conversation than what is there, except to say this. If you need help, ask for it. If you think there's in some way Natasha or I can help you, we will do what we can to aid you. You can reach Natasha at her blog, theyearofblackclothing.wordpress.com. By email, morningsolidarityrebellion@gmail.com, or via Facebook at facebook.com/morning.solidarity.rebellion. Of course, you'll find copies of all of that information in the show notes. You can also reach out to me if you like. Email show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, phone 717-827-6266, on Facebook by searching for The Permaculture Podcast, or on Twitter, where I am @permaculturecst. If you've not heard it yet, also go back one episode into the archives from this show and listen to the Traveling Permaculture Library Project. That's a little something I've started and want you to be a part of. Coming up next week is the second part of my conversation with Adam Campbell, and after that, Wilson Alvarez and Ben Wise return for another interview about permaculture and rewilding. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other. And that little bit of legal. The Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann is released under a Creative Commons, Attribution, No Derivatives, Non-Commercial License. Feel free to share it with whoever you like. Just tell them where you got it from, and don't change or sell it.